My guest at this time is former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. He is now with the American Enterprise Institute. We've asked him to join us to discuss one of the biggest foreign policy stories of the week, because while the media was mostly transfixed upon the healthcare debate, O.J. Simpson's parole, and the latest reports on the Russia investigation, President Trump very reluctantly agreed to recertify the Iran nuclear deal, an agreement that Trump regularly slammed throughout the 2016 presidential race. Mr. Ambassador, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, glad to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, after Trump confirmed that Iran was officially complying with the deal, you said on Twitter that this agreement needs to go the way of the Paris Climate Accords and be abrogated. Why do you believe that?
Well, I think it was a strategic disaster for the United States when it was negotiated 2 years ago. I think events since then have proven it to be adverse to our interests and those of our friends in the region. And I think it'll continue to make things very, very difficult for us to stop Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. This deal doesn't really constrain Iran. It empowers them. And so it was an unfortunate decision for the administration to issue this certification. I think once again, the president was blindsided by the bureaucracy. I think he made it clear on Monday he didn't want it to happen again. So I think at least it has gotten to the point where now we're going to have within the administration, I believe, a pretty straight up debate on what to do about this deal. Really, it was the bureaucracy on autopilot from the Obama administration. You know, if you don't tell them to change direction, they just keep doing what they were doing before. There's substantial evidence of really severe Iranian violations of the deal, and that's only the tip of the iceberg. From what we know, I'm sure there's more beneath the surface. So it was a bad decision. It was really, I think the president felt he had no choice, but I don't think it's going to happen again.
Well, let's talk about a couple of the points that you raised, because I think they're critically important to this discussion. You mentioned the bureaucracy and how things are on autopilot due to folks that are holdovers from the previous administration. According to the New York Times report on the president's decision, though, his top appointees also argued in favor of this. That includes Defense Secretary Mattis, Secretary of State Tillerson, National Security Advisor McMaster, and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Dunford. So why do you think all of them were encouraging the status quo here?
Well, I think the bureaucracies have a way of capturing the appointees. And, of course, some of those you mentioned are actually still in the bureaucracy or really never left it. But it's an art form, and it's if people who know Washington, particularly who have watched the State Department, seduce political appointees, especially Republicans, and they make reasonable sounding arguments that are simply justifications for continuing the prior policy. For example, the argument that our allies would be upset if we abrogated the Iran deal. I think what would upset the allies is the fact that the Trump administration itself doesn't like the deal. The president made it clear during the election campaign he thought it was a bad deal, and rightly so, in my view. And, you know, if the allies are going to be upset by something, what you do is a vigorous diplomatic campaign to explain why we think the deal was a mistake, and indeed they made the same mistake we did, and why we've got to correct it before it's too late, because the consequences of a bad deal are a regime of religious fanatics in Iran getting nuclear weapons. This is a bad thing, and I think even the allies understand that if you can present the arguments effectively. So, you know, there's a lot of inertia in bureaucracy. And those who want to see the deal continued have been relying on that inertia. But as I say, my guess, and I think you can read it in the public reports after Monday, is that they pressed their luck one time too far and the inertia has been broken.
So as you mentioned before, you don't think he's going to recertify it at the next opportunity. So in your estimation, it doesn't get harder to shift course the longer this deal's in place?
It certainly does get harder, and that's what I think was part of the bureaucracy strategy here. The first time, 3 months ago, when the certification came up, I think there was nobody at the White House who was really aware of what was going to happen. I mean, the authority technically was delegated to the Secretary of State, but everybody knows this is such a sensitive issue. The president's going to have to sign off on it, and there was almost no time to consider it. They rewrote the certification letter. The Secretary of State made a long statement the next day about how egregious Iran's behavior had been. Even in the certification that took place later this week, it's clear from the statements people have made that they're saying that Iran's violating the spirit of the deal, just not the letter. I mean, it's a committee camel that came out, and it reflects the confusion that's caused when you don't give the president options and when you don't allow time for a full debate. And I think that is what those mistakes will not be made again.
Explain what they meant and you understood by Iran violating the spirit of the deal, if not the letter.
I would not have said that. I'd have been more direct. They are violating the letter of the deal. The argument that that could have been made is that many of the provisions of the deal are so badly worded, they're so ambiguous, that a reasonable person could say, well, you know, the Iranians came up right to the line of their interpretation of the deal and they didn't cross it. So, you know, it's hard to say it's really a violation. That's the argument. That argument fails for several reasons. First off, the fact that the agreement is badly worded is one more reason to junk it. It shows just how poorly our negotiators, including specifically Secretary of State John Kerry, did. It shows the leeway that it affords Iran, and it shows the way forward. They're going to press the ambiguities right to the outer limit that we know of, and you know, if they can hide what they're doing, they'll press it beyond the outer limit and make it impossible to enforce the deal strictly. That's part of the problem. The deal is so bad that trying to enforce it strictly is like nailing Jell-O to a wall. So these are the kinds of scholastic arguments that people can have about the nature of the deal and whether it's being technically violated. Let's be clear. Iran has never abandoned its policy to get deliverable nuclear weapons, and it's exploiting this deal. It's made temporary, easily reversible concessions. It's cooperating with North Korea, which is getting ever closer to its own deliverable nuclear weapons capability. We're living in a delusion if we think this deal is slowing Iran down.
And when it comes to the other aspects of the deal, or I guess perhaps more accurately, the aspects that aren't in the deal, even if they are complying fairly close to the letter of the agreement, when you consider the sites that don't have any time anywhere inspections or the fact that the missile program is left out of the deal altogether, even if they actually were complying to the letter of the law, there's still a lot to be concerned about here.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt there are the military aspects of Iran's program have never been open to IAEA inspections, International Atomic Energy Agency, and they're not open now. The missile deal, discussions about the ballistic missile program are contained in a document that's a statement by the five permanent members of the Security Council in Germany. Iran never actually agreed to that document. Now, it's contained in a Security Council resolution that calls upon Iran not to develop ballistic missiles under the terms of the agreement by the five permanent members. But calling upon Iran, you can say, well, we called upon them and they ignored it, so I guess they're not in violation. This is insane. This ignores reality. And the reality is that Iran continues, both on the ballistic missile front and on the nuclear front, to get closer to the objective it's been pursuing for 30 years, which is deliverable nuclear weapons. And to act as though this agreement or the Security Council resolution is restraining them, I just think is the height of dereliction of duty.
We're speaking with former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, John Bolton. And, sir, one last topic, but it's a pretty meaty one. If we were to scrap the deal, what's the right policy towards Iran from the Trump administration, in your estimation, whether we're talking about deterring nukes or blocking its efforts to expand its influence in its part of the world with influence in Iraq and Syria and beyond?
Well, all of these things are going on already. We don't have a strategy. The bureaucracy's not produced a new strategy for the new administration. And the fact is, after all these years of diplomacy, both in the Obama and Bush administrations, our options are very limited. I think we should try and put all the sanctions back in place. But I think, to be realistic, if we don't want Iran to have deliverable nuclear weapons, if that's what really what we believe, we and Israel have to look at a military option. Israel has not hesitated twice before. It has struck targets in rogue states developing nuclear programs they felt threatened Israel, once against Saddam Hussein's Iraq in 1981, once against Syria in September of 2007. They've said they're never going to allow Iran to get nuclear weapons. We're very close to the point where we have to consider that, especially, and I come back again to North Korea, given the cooperation between those two rogue states.
Mr. Ambassador, we'll let you have a fun weekend. Thank you, sir, very much for your time and your expertise, as always.
Well, I like to say I spread sweetness and light wherever I go.
Always sunny. Mr. Ambassador John Bolton, former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, now with the American Enterprise Institute. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.